What's up, football fans? Kevin Smith with you again for another episode of The Call Sheet, episode 45, as we head to the end of February. Interesting time of year. I mean, the season is behind us, so we got time to, I guess, genuflect on what happened. And then the new league year is still a couple weeks away, and so we also have time to speculate on what might happen. Puts us in an interesting little window where we have a lot of latitude as to what direction we might go in. And I hope the direction of today's show is interesting for you. I think it's a great topic. Today's show is going to largely be about Heisman Trophy winners and how they have fared in the NFL and what that might mean for the two Heisman Trophy winners, Jaden Daniels of LSU and Caleb Williams of USC, who are available in this year's draft. And to do that, to get to that conversation, we're going to start, as we always do, with a player who wore the number of the episode. And this is episode 45. And really the impetus for this conversation is the fact that we're going to talk about Archie Griffin. Archie Griffin, the Ohio State tailback, only player to ever win the Heisman Trophy twice, starred at Ohio State between 1973 and 1976. The Buckeyes went 40-5. In their time there in Griffin's 4 years. Interestingly, though, they never won a championship after the 75 season, the 1976 Rose Bowl. They went into that game 11-0 to play a USC team where Ohio State was a 15-point favorite. That UCLA team was coached by Dick Vermeil, and the Bruins pulled the upset, denying the Bucks a national title. So, despite the fact that Griffin rushed for over 5,000 yards in his career. And again, the only two-time Heisman Trophy winner, never won a national title despite the Buckeyes going 40-5 in his time there. And he was drafted 24th overall by the Bengals in that 1976 draft. He played 7 years in the NFL, all for the Bengals. And, you know, after football, he went on to become the CEO of the OSU Alumni Association. And today, sits on the board of some prestigious football-related institutions, such as the College Football Hall of Fame and the National Football Foundation, which I have some association with the National Football Foundation. It does some wonderful things for scholar athletes, and they have a banquet in our area every year that I go to. And this year, one of our players, John Moyer, wide receiver, headed to Lafayette College in Pennsylvania, a good Patriot League school, is going to be honored by the NFF. And again, Archie Griffin sits on that board. So doing a lot of great things for football players in his life, Archie Griffin. But, you know, while Archie Griffin was a tremendous college player, he didn't do nearly as well as a pro. In his 7 seasons in Cincinnati, he rushed for just over 2,000 yards, the only player to win the Heisman Trophy twice. And that brings us to an interesting question, which is this. Why do some Heisman Trophy winners succeed while others fail? And it's interesting, if you look at the list, more tend to fail in the NFL than do succeed. What allows some of these players to dominate the competition at the major college level, but then to fall off once they reach the pros? And then, you know, what are the characteristics that are common in those who continue their success at the pro level? You know, so to answer these questions, let's look at some of the players who fell into each category. Obviously, we'll start with Archie Griffin. Great college back, but at 5'9" with average speed, he was probably not built to be a feature down back, every down back in the NFL. His success in college was, you know, largely a part of that scheme fit at Ohio State. His head coach was Woody Hayes, famous for the 3 yards in a cloud of dust mentality. Run, and run some more. Griffin ran behind some big, powerful Ohio State lines at a time where the Big Ten was still the premier conference in college football. They recruited and attracted the best talent, sort of an ideal situation for Archie Griffin. But in Cincinnati, he joined a Bengals squad that had built its success. They were a pretty good team. They went 10-4 his rookie year, had a couple playoff runs, and in Archie Griffin's last year, they made it to the Super Bowl. But that success had largely been around the passing game, featuring quarterback Ken Anderson and then his successor, Boomer Esiason. So establishing the run was never something that Cincinnati prioritized. And Griffin, you know, he was a decent receiver out of the backfield, and he proved to be a serviceable back, but the scheme wasn't built for him to dominate at the pro level, and he didn't really have the physical tools to do so on his own. And let's look at another Heisman Trophy winner who has a similar story, Ron Dayne, right? Ron Dayne out of South Jersey's Overbrook High School. Shout out to Overbrook and South Jersey. Dayne rushed for over 7,000 yards in his career at Wisconsin. And he went over 2,000 in a season twice. And he was the perfect back for Wisconsin's bruising rushing attack. I mean, the Badgers loaded the field with gigantic linemen and piled up with tight ends and fullbacks, 22 personnel, 23 personnel. And behind them, they handed the ball to the 5'10", 250-pound Dayne over and over again until the defense just simply got tired of tackling him. And, you know, in the NFL, Dayne had some early success as part of the Thunder and Lightning backfield with him and Tiki Barber, if you guys remember those Giants teams in the 90s, early 2000s. But he just wasn't quick enough, Ron Dayne, nor did he possess good enough vision to be an every down back in the league. He kind of lumbered a little bit at the NFL level. He ran into the backs of his linemen a bit. He lasted 8 seasons with 3 different teams, but his overall total of 3,700 yards was not overwhelming, and he never rushed for more than 800 in a single season. So Griffin, and maybe to a lesser degree Dayne, were guys who excelled in a certain college scheme, but they weren't as suited to adapt to a new scheme or a new level of talent in the pros. And you know, so too were Heisman quarterback winners like Eric Crouch and Tim Tebow and Andre Ware. These first two, Crouch and Tebow, they were run-first quarterbacks who really lacked the elite arm talent to succeed in the NFL. Crouch ran the option at Nebraska under Tom Osborne, and Tebow ran Urban Meyer's read option scheme at Florida. And both of them relied on the running ability of the quarterback to succeed more so than their passing, and neither prepared those quarterbacks for an NFL-style passing game. Crouch and Tebow, phenomenal college quarterbacks, but their skill set did not translate to how quarterbacks played in the NFL. Now, Andre Ware, he's a totally different story. At the University of Houston in the late 1980s, he put up absurd numbers in the run-and-shoot style passing attack of the innovative Mouse Davis. And Davis's protege, Jack Pardee, ran it at Houston. And in 1989, with Ware as his quarterback, the Cougars put up an astonishing 53 points per game that season. And they averaged 624 yards of offense per contest. And as great as Ware was, he stood 6'1". He weighed just under 200 pounds. I mean, he wasn't Doug Flutie small, but he wasn't built to stand in an NFL pocket and take hits from professional defenders. I mean, he was done in also by the fact that, you know, other than a brief flirtation with the run and shoot from the Houston Oilers, no NFL team ran that system for the simple fact they just believed it exposed the quarterback to too many hits. They didn't think anybody could survive it. Buddy Ryan once sarcastically called the scheme the chuck and duck, and he vowed to knock any opposing quarterback out of the game whose team dared to run it against them. So it was the system that Ware knew and felt most comfortable in, but it didn't translate to the pros. And really, because of that, neither did Andre Ware. You know, and there are others, right? Quarterbacks especially. There's Marcus Mariota, Robert Griffin III, Troy Smith. Those are all guys whose talents were perfectly suited for their college scheme, but not really what they faced in the pros, whether it was an inability to read pro defenses or lacking the arm talent, phrase everybody likes to use these days, arm talent, right? Or lacking the command of the locker room, the leadership factor, whatever it was, it resonated with 20, 21, 22-year-olds in college. But when you got into a huddle of grown men, 30-year-old men with wives and children, who approached the NFL as a business, some of these guys just couldn't command those individuals the way that they could command their college teammates. So this is probably the most common reason why Heisman Trophy winners do not succeed in the pros, that the schemes that make them great in college are not schemes that are user-friendly in the pros. or, you know, they get drafted by teams who don't employ those schemes and the players aren't suited to adapt to something else. Sometimes those factors then combine with poor personal habits, as in the case of Johnny Manziel, and then, you know, the player is simply doomed. I mean, bottom line, there's no guarantee that being a great college player, even a Heisman Trophy winner, will guarantee professional success. And Archie Griffin's probably a great example of that. Maybe one of the greatest. You know, then again, there's players that are great on both levels, plenty of them. I mean, that's a recognizable list for obvious reasons, because these are some of the best players to ever play the game. Heisman Trophy winners who went on to excel in the pros include Barry Sanders, Marcus Allen, Tony Dorsett, Earl Campbell, Charles Woodson, Bo Jackson, Eddie George, Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow. I mean, with all of these players, their talent in many ways transcended scheme. I mean, they were good enough to succeed in almost any environment. Obviously, the teams with whom they landed understood how best to use them. The Titans weren't stupid. They didn't ask Derrick Henry to be a scat back in a spread scheme. And, you know, the Bengals aren't asking Joe Burrow to do Lamar Jackson things. They're obviously smart enough to develop the scheme around the strengths of their player. But the combination of the talent of the player and then the fit, that's just right and has led to great success at the pro level for many of these Heisman Trophy winners. And that brings us to what I think is a really fascinating question and an interesting topic of the looming 2024 NFL season. So the league year begins on March 13th, and that's really where you can start to see teams in the legal tampering period start to negotiate with free agents, and then you'll see a flurry of free agent signings in those early days. And the free agent wave will come and go, and then there'll be a little bit of downtime as we head into the draft. And that gives us lots of time to speculate on maybe the most interesting team in this entire offseason, and that is the Chicago Bears. Why are the Bears the most interesting team in this entire offseason? Because they hold the number one pick. And the intrigue around the Bears, of course, involves what they will do with their own quarterback, Justin Fields. Will the Bears hold on to Justin Fields and try to develop him around their new offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, whom the Bears have hired away from the Seattle Seahawks? Waldron had a lot of success reviving the career of Geno Smith in Seattle, built a top 10 passing game with the Seahawks 3 years in a row, and now comes over to Chicago to be their OC. Or will they part ways with Justin Fields? Will they trade him and then draft one of the top quarterbacks? They are said to be enamored with Caleb Williams, the Heisman Trophy winner from 2022 out of USC, who, to be honest, man, you read draft profiles of Caleb Williams, there's a lot of mixture on him, man. There are some guys who say, hey, he is Patrick Mahomes-esque. And there are others who believe that, man, maybe he'll wind up being a little bit more like a Mariota, a guy who doesn't necessarily read coverages great and whose talents don't wind up leading to him becoming a franchise quarterback. So we're going to take a break. And on the other side, we're going to talk about the interesting question that is Caleb Williams, the Heisman Trophy winner from 2023. Jaden Daniels, who doesn't get talked about much, right? All the quarterback talk seems to be about Williams or Drake May. You even hear more about J.J. McCarthy than you do about Daniels. What is it that allowed Daniels to win the Heisman Trophy, and why do people seem to be devaluing him in the upcoming NFL draft? And if the Bears don't draft a quarterback, how might they rework their offense around Justin Fields? So come on back for some interesting quarterback talk involving the Chicago Bears, the Heisman Trophy winners, and where the offseason might go once the new league year kicks off. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the call sheet. Kevin Smith with you for part two of our show. And in the first part, we were talking about Heisman Trophy winners and why some succeed in the NFL and some do not. Starting our conversation with the great Archie Griffin, the only two-time Heisman Trophy winner, and leaving off by discussing the decision that the Chicago Bears will face as they will have the number one pick in the draft and are said to be really enamored with USC quarterback Caleb Williams, so much so that they may move on from Justin Fields this offseason. And if the Bears do that, that would be a bold move on their part. There will probably be suitors for Fields. They'll probably find a decent deal for him. I mean, possible landing spots for him, maybe Pittsburgh, maybe Atlanta, who knows, even New England. You never know. But the thing that the Bears have to decide is this. Are they sold that if they move on from Justin Fields, that Caleb Williams will be everything that they believe him to be? And that is a really tricky thing. As we were talking about before the break, there have been really more, I don't want to say busts, but I will say Heisman Trophy winners who did not live up to the hype or did not turn in professional careers that were equal to their collegiate careers. Then there have been those who excelled at the NFL level. I won't go through every single Heisman Trophy winner, but when you look down the list, there are more Jason Whites on that list than there are Bo Jacksons. And so which one will Caleb Williams be? That is a fascinating question. And when you read the scouting report on Caleb Williams, it's really easy to fall in love with him. You read things like, if you just go through any scouting report on Caleb Williams, you'll hear things like, super elite arm talent. He rips passes with laser-like velocity, can target throws into rapidly closing windows, is a generational creator with incredible spatial awareness and agility and control, that his off-platform game is through the roof. These are all things that people said about Patrick Mahomes: the instincts, the arm, the sense of pressure and when to bail in the pocket. And that's all the kind of stuff that makes you say, we can't pass on this guy. This is a guy who's got a chance to be Mahomes-like. And if you pass on that and then you stick with Justin Fields and it doesn't work out, that's how people get fired in the NFL. You get fired. And if you're Matt Eberflus, you can't afford to miss on this, because he did enough this past season to put the Bears back together in the second half to retain his job. Ironically, or interestingly, I should say, much of that had to do with Justin Fields playing much better football in the second half of the season than he did in the first half. But if you move on from Fields, it's got to be a home run. And if Williams is that guy, you can't be wrong about him. Now, I'm not saying that Williams is a guy who you're going to miss on. I watched enough USC football to see the same things that everybody else is seeing. A guy who was an elite talent, who's a creator, who's a winner. My gosh, he threw 72 touchdowns against 10 interceptions in college. But I watched that Notre Dame game where he threw three first-half interceptions and generally didn't play his best football. And you saw him afterwards in the stands sobbing. And that emotion told you two things. One, how deeply he cares about the game and about winning. And two, though, that he's an emotional guy. And there are some concerns when you think about emotional quarterbacks. John Wooden once said that emotion is the enemy of reason. Emotion clouds your judgment. It's an interesting thing to think about, right? Do you have to be truly level-headed? Can you play without emotion? Obviously, you have emotional quarterbacks. Tom Brady was emotional at times. Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, all those guys. But at what point does that cloud your judgment? And is that a concern with Williams? I mean, obviously, I don't know enough about him to say that it is. But when I read the weaknesses in his scouting reports, there are some things that do raise a few questions. A lot of those weaknesses sound something like this, that he sometimes fails to anticipate windows over the middle, that he sometimes has delays between moving from his first to his second read, that sometimes that hesitation by missing on those initial reads can cause him to be late with the football, which can lead to mistakes, aka turnovers. I read one scouting report where they said that he has arm arrogance, which means that when he's pressured or when he's in a situation where maybe he should throw the ball away, that he tries to fit that ball into a tight window, which he probably gets away with at the college level, but which you will find out at the pro level, you cannot. NFL open and college open are two vastly different things for a quarterback. And so if there are occasional lapses in progression, if there are occasional lapses in ball security, and if he struggles reading over the middle, where the best NFL quarterbacks make their money. Let's face it, the three things I just talked about, progressions, pocket presence, reading windows, throwing the ball over the middle, that's what separates the good quarterbacks from the great quarterbacks or the average quarterbacks from the merely good quarterbacks, their ability to work that part of the field. The Steelers famously refused to let Kenny Pickett throw the ball in the middle of the field his first two seasons. There was a lot of debate about whether or not that was a failure on the part of offense coordinator Matt Canada. Did Canada just not scheme up enough stuff in the middle of the field to allow Pickett to operate there? Or more likely, did the Steelers simply not trust Pickett's ability to read that part of the field and therefore didn't allow him to throw there? And as a result, there are serious questions about Kenny Pickett's viability as an NFL quarterback. Interestingly, in talking Justin Fields, there's a lot of conversation in and around Pittsburgh about whether the Steelers will make a move for Justin Fields. So it's interesting to sort of be linking these. But again, that comes back to, you know, can Pickett play in the middle of the field? And when you read some of these scouting reports about Williams and, you know, maybe some of his struggles there, it certainly raises an eyebrow or two. None of this is to say you shouldn't draft the guy. None of this is to say he will be a bust, but all of it has to sort of be thrown into the big pot of considerations. And the Bears have to be sure if they're going to make this move, that they're going to move on from Fields and take Williams, that he's a guy who they believe can either do these things or they can get him to do these things. That Shane Waldron will be able to scheme up enough stuff effectively in the middle of the field and teach the read progressions to allow Williams to succeed, or at least to allow him to take advantage of all these other tremendous attributes that he has. In short, the Bears have to both be right on Williams and be right on their ability to develop Williams, much like the Houston Texans did with C.J. Stroud. That was a wonderful marriage of the team picking the right guy and the guy landing with the right team. All right, so last thought on Williams before we move to the other Heisman Trophy winner in this class, Jaden Daniels. Williams, you know, as that Heisman guy, will sort of carry a little bit of the stigmatism of Heisman quarterbacks. The last few Heisman quarterbacks, with the exception of Joe Burrow, have struggled. I mean, Burrow and Lamar Jackson certainly did well, but Jameis Winston did not. Marcus Mariota did not. Johnny Manziel certainly did not. You can look at the line of fairly recent quarterbacks to win the Heisman Trophy and argue easily that more of them have become busts than successes, right? I mean, I mentioned Jason White. He's a guy that goes into that category. Chris Wanky. These are all guys that have won the Heisman in the last 25 years at the quarterback position who struggled when they got to the NFL. So the odds say, and again, these are just odds, but the odds say that it's more likely that Williams struggles than he becomes an elite player, which will not dissuade teams from taking a quarterback, obviously. But it just tells you that in no situation is this a slam dunk or a certainty. Which brings us to Jaden Daniels, right? The other Heisman winner in this draft. So Jaden Daniels is the current Heisman Trophy winner. And he is coming off a season that was phenomenal, I think is too slight a word. Jaden Daniels just finished a season in the SEC against the toughest competition in college football, where he completed 72% of his passes, 40 touchdowns against just 4 interceptions. Think about that. 40 passing touchdowns against 4 interceptions. And meanwhile, on the ground, he rushed for over 1,100 yards and 10 more scores. Those are some of the greatest numbers I've ever seen for a quarterback at any level, much less Division I SEC football. And so why isn't there that buzz about Daniels that there is about Williams? Why are people not talking about Daniels, who's certainly going to be a first-round pick, maybe even a top 10 pick? But when you hear people talk about the best two quarterbacks in this draft, it's Williams and Drake May, and you take your pick. And the Bears are even said to be considering Drake May if they move on from Fields. Why aren't they considering Daniels? Why is Daniels not being billed as a number one, number two, even top three pick with the Patriots sitting there at number three? 40 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 72% completion percentage, 1,100 yards rushing, 10 rushing touchdowns. My goodness, on and on it goes. So why not Daniels? Again, man, you know, you go to the scouting reports, and what do the scouting reports say? That he is a big play machine, that he is a turbocharged athlete, that he has rare speed, elusive twitch and bend, that he can anticipate. That's a big time NFL trait. He anticipates receivers coming open, that he knows how to use his eyes, that he can look defenders off. That is a huge, huge plus in the NFL. That his instincts are tremendous. That he's a great leader, right? That he's a crisp rhythm passer. My goodness, man. If you want to describe an NFL quarterback, a guy who operates out of the pocket with anticipation, with good eyes, in rhythm, but who outside of the pocket is incredibly twitchy and has elite athleticism, that sounds like a dream quarterback. So what's the criticism, man? Why is Daniels not being valued the same as Williams and May? Well, he's 6'4", but he's just 210 pounds. And a lot of people think that 210 might be an exaggeration. He might be closer to 200. And that slender frame is not going to bode well for his NFL career. That it's going to put him in that Teddy Bridgewater category of a guy who, if he stands in the pocket too much and can't get out and escape, is just going to get hurt. He's going to be an injury waiting to happen. And they also cite his arm strength, that he has non-elite velocity, that sometimes by not having that elite velocity, it allows defensive backs to close ground. Can he make the NFL dropout throw, right, from a far hash to the opposite sideline? Can he fit in the cover two beater on the fade flat concept, where you got to squeeze that fade ball in between the corner and the closing safety? Can he make that throw, or is he going to hang that throw and get his receiver knocked out? I mean, these seem to be the things that are holding him back. And I know that NFL evaluators, man, they love arm talent. Arm talent is a word that just about every scout and any NFL guy will tell you, man, that they're in love with. And maybe Jaden Daniels doesn't have the arm talent that May or Williams do. And so I find it really interesting, because the things that are described as Daniels' strengths are, in my opinion, unbelievably appealing, more so than Drake May, who I'm not talking about because we're really kind of focusing on Heisman Trophy winners. But I find them to be incredibly attractive, and that the other things are things you can compensate for. I don't necessarily believe that every quarterback with elite arm talent becomes a great quarterback, and every quarterback who lacks it cannot become a great quarterback. I think that arm talent, while obviously very important, is also something that can be a bit overrated if a quarterback doesn't possess some of the other traits that Daniels certainly seems to. So I'll just put this out here right now, right? Just to wrap up this conversation, I'll put this out there. I'm not trying to rush anything, but I'll be fascinated to follow the arc of Williams and Daniels, the two Heisman Trophy winners in this class. History tells us that the odds are slim that both of them will become stars. History tells us that when you chart all of the Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks of the last quarter century, more of them wind up being mediocre to busty. I don't mean that to be a provocative reference. Mediocre to a bust, as opposed to franchise guy or transcendental Mahomes-like kind of guy. Odds are that one of these two guys is not going to be great. And it'll be really interesting to see which one. I am not convinced that it's a slam dunk that Williams is the superstar and Daniels is the mediocre guy who never distinguishes himself. I wouldn't be shocked if it were the other way around. But only time will tell, and it'll be fascinating to see what the Chicago Bears do. Are they moving on from Fields? Are they taking Williams? Hey, man, are they taking Drake May? Who knows? I don't think so, but I think it's the first of one of those first two options. Can't wait to see how it goes. Can't wait to see where Daniels lands up, because I'm really intrigued by that young man. All right, we're going to wrap it there, man. This was episode 45 of The Call Sheet, talking Heisman Trophy winners and related subjects. Really enjoyed it. Hope everybody had a good listen here. Come on back next week. Next week, episode 46. We're not going to talk about a player next week. We're actually going to talk about a scheme. It's episode number 46, and we're going to talk about the 1986 Chicago Bears defense, the 46 defense. What was that all about? How did the Bears become legendary playing the 46 defense? And what are some of the most fascinating schemes in the NFL today that we could one day be looking back at the way we look back at the 46 defense of the Bears? So I hope you'll join me for that conversation. Have a great week, everybody. This is Kevin Smith for The Call Sheet.